RAC's Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Bongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. Far-reaching social changes are needed to manage the increasing threats of climate change, which poses health issues worldwide. That's according to Professor Alastair Woodward, Head of Epidemiology and Biostatistics at the University of Auckland. Professor Woodward was speaking at the recent annual scientific meeting held at Te Papa in Wellington, New Zealand, on why climate change is a health issue. Chris Ashmore asks Professor Woodward whether he has any doubts climate change is having an accelerating impact on global health.
No, I don't have any doubts. I mean, I think that's one thing that has become increasingly apparent in the last 10 years, really, that the world's environment's changing, the climate's changing, and the signs of effects on human health are there for anybody who wishes to look.
Well, you've said health is an early casualty of global warming. Is it a bit like the canary down the coal mine? We should be taking note fast of what's going on?
Well, I think we should, but I'm not sure that the canary analogy is a good one. Certainly in places like Australia and New Zealand and other developed countries, we've got lots of buffers that protect us, you know, against changes in the environment. Other parts of the world, of course, it's not the same, and many populations are exquisitely sensitive to extreme weather, changes in the distribution of disease-carrying vectors and so on. But, you know, in New Zealand or in Australia, heat waves, people go indoors and ramp up the air conditioner. You know, to some extent, we're protected until limits of adaptation are exceeded. And, I think the floods in the United States recently, you know, make that clear. You know, of all the reports that came in from Houston, one of the most poignant to my mind was a picture of an elderly patient in a hospital bed. She had an oxygen mask on and IV drip taped to her arm, and her ward had turned into an inland sea. You know, so here we had the most resource-rich healthcare system in the most powerful country in the world upended by an extraordinary storm. That's what happens when the limits of adaptation are exceeded, and those kinds of events are a signal that something is amiss.
Well, those are perhaps the immediate consequences of weather events and climate change. But if we look at the biggest health impacts of climate change, what are they and where are they happening?
Well, I think the biggest effects are probably the indirect ones. So you're quite right to say that the obvious impacts, the heat waves and the storms and so on, may not be the most substantial. I think probably the biggest effects are on food supply. And they are evident in parts of the world where people are reliant on local food production. Those are parts of the world that, you know, are not on the front page of the newspaper necessarily, and the impacts are not well documented. But the collapse of the rural economy in Syria following severe drought, you know, of course, has had substantial consequences subsequently. What's happening in sub-Saharan Africa at the moment has got a flavour of climate change about it. It's not to say that droughts in that part of the world didn't occur in the past. Of course they did. But what's happening with the changes in the global climate is that these events are more severe, their tracks are changing, and the impacts are greater than in the past.
Is this one of the biggest impacts, the displacement of populations?
It's certainly something that's on people's minds. I mean, you look at Bangladesh, for example, and the consequences of 2 or 3 metres of sea level rise are measured in the hundreds of millions of people who could be displaced, very likely will be. So it's certainly something people are very concerned about. I don't think we've seen evidence yet of massive impacts as a consequence of population movement, but it's a risk. It's certainly a risk in the future.
Well, these are poorer nations around the world that seem to be bearing most of the brunt of climate change. Are Western nations dragging their feet, perhaps because the impact hasn't been so direct so far?
It is difficult, isn't it, to imagine what might happen in the future and to take action. You know, I think we're sort of hardwired, really, to respond to what's immediately in front of us. to deal with sort of visible dangers, you know, roughly the size of a London taxi, you know. And here we have something that's intangible, it's distant, it's remote. It's hard to get your mind around it. And particularly when we live in societies that can turn on the air conditioner if it gets too hot, and we go down to the supermarket and, you know, buy our food that's shipped in from Ecuador or Morocco. So we are protected in lots of ways. And it's when extreme events happen. I mean, in the case of Australia, of course, you have heat waves, you have bushfires. In New Zealand, we've had extreme floods in the last year that probably have been aided and abetted by climate change. So we've got to look quite hard to see the local impacts and the significant effects that are happening in poorer and more exposed populations. Of course, require people to look further afield than they might usually. So it is a struggle to explain why this is an important issue, but it is a terribly important one. So somehow we've got to engage with it and anticipate what lies ahead, and try and reduce the extent of the damage as far as possible.
Well, you say that far-reaching social changes are needed to manage new threats. What kinds of social changes would you like to see?
Well, a good example, I think, is putting a price on carbon. You know, that just seems an absolute fundamental. At the moment, the environmental costs of burning fossil fuels are not apparent in the price. And we know from Economics 101 that if you want to get efficient use of resources, they've got to be priced so people can make a choice. Now, it depends how we do that. If we put a full price on very rapidly without relief, you know, we might be faced with something like $200 a ton of carbon. Now, the consequences, unless we're careful, could be devastating. I mean, you think about our healthcare system, which has got a substantial carbon footprint. I'm not sure how we would manage to run healthcare in Australia and New Zealand if all of a sudden authorities had to pay $200 of carbon per tonne of emissions. So, you know, that's an example of the kind of radical change that I think we're going to have to come to. And it's a question of whether we make those changes carefully or whether we're pushed because we've procrastinated to make changes very rapidly, in which case there could be severe effects.
Mm. Well, it's the danger of poorly chosen responses, as you just mentioned. Do you have any other examples of how we could get things wrong if we chose the wrong response to climate change?
Well, another example, of course, is the biofuels story. So moving away from oil to biofuels, that's got a lot going for it. But where do we get the biofuels from? And the first moves in that direction were to use food crops, and particularly in the United States, where enormous amounts of maize and soybeans and so on are grown. Now, if we divert that stream of produce to the biofuels, then it's going to drive up the price of commodities. And for communities that don't have much leeway in terms of paying for their food, you know, that can have significant effects. You know, another example of what Mark Carney, the governor of the Bank of England, has called transition risks, which he said are substantial. You know, the transition to a new energy order, how we do it is going to be very, very important.
What are the biggest issues for the medical profession, including surgeons who will be listening to you now?
I think it's important that the medical profession understands the broader picture. I mean, doctors have been significant opinion leaders in the past when it comes to big issues, whether it's to do with road safety or refugee welfare or prevention of nuclear warfare. Lots of examples where doctors have led the way in terms of really, really important social issues. And I think climate change falls into that category. So I think there's an opportunity, and more than an opportunity, I think there's a crying need for doctors, all doctors, surgeons included, certainly, to be aware of what the challenge is and to join in the debate and to present their points of view, because people listen. People really take note of what it is that doctors have got to say.
Well, the talk you gave at the annual scientific meeting in Wellington this year was titled Future-Proofing Surgical Practice. What do you mean? What does that really imply?
Well, it means a variety of things, I think. I think when it comes to climate change, that certainly it means that doctors should be abreast of the big picture issues that are going to influence the way we run our society generally, and healthcare is going to be part of that. So there's that general point that I've just made. There is a very specific issue as well, and that's to do with the way we operate our healthcare system, the extent to which it's sustainable, the environmental impact of the way that surgeons and hospitals and healthcare professionals generally operate. We need to be thoughtful about it. We need to find ways of reducing environmental impact. And we also need to be thoughtful about the ways in which a changing environment is going to affect the healthcare system. So the cause and effect runs in both directions. So future-proofing healthcare means, I think, shrinking our footprint and making healthcare more resilient in the face of an energetic and threatening world in the future.
Are you optimistic that we can achieve positive steps in alleviating the health impacts of climate change, despite what appears to be an overwhelming threat?
Yes, I am. I am optimistic. I think on all the fronts that I've just described, you know, you can point to good practice, can point to improvements. At the meeting in Wellington, there were some great examples given from both Australia and New Zealand of surgeons, operating theatre teams, hospitals, taking, you know, very sensible steps. And the exciting thing from my point of view is that there are win-win interventions. I mean, if we look for them, it's possible to reduce climate risk and improve the quality of care at the same time and reduce economic costs. So very simple things like waste management, building design, low carbon procurement. There's a variety of fronts in which surgeons and medical professionals and hospitals can make good choices that make a material difference to greenhouse emissions and climate risk, and also, you know, make sense anyway in terms of a more nimble, more efficient and more effective healthcare system.
And if you had a final message to surgeons who are listening, what would your biggest message to them be?
I like the advice that I was given by a senior person working in this field a while ago. And he said, what you can do as a professional is vote, model and speak. So, I mean, this is ultimately, there are important political decisions to be taken. And so I think as citizens, you know, we shouldn't forget that voting is terribly important and being thoughtful about what we do. Modelling, even in small ways, I think making the sort of change that we believe should happen is good for our morale, and I think it also helps drive home the message. And lastly, to speak out. I mean, these do seem difficult and distant issues to wrestle with, but they are terribly important. I think, you know, for the points I've already made, that it's particularly important for surgeons and doctors to be part of the discussion about climate change and how we're going to respond.
Professor Alastair Woodward. RAC's Post-Op Podcast is brought to you with the compliments of the Royal Australasian College of Surgeons and leading financial services organisation, the Buongiorno National Network, the preferred choice for medical professionals across Australia. You can reach the Buongiorno National Network on +613 9863 3111.